Bless the Lord, O my soul, O Lord my God, you are very great.
You set the earth on its foundations, so that it shall never be shaken.
You make springs gush forth in the valleys, giving drink to every wild animal.
You cause the grass to grow for the cattle and plants for people to use.
You have made the moon to mark the seasons. The sun knows its time for setting.
O Lord, how manifold are your works. In wisdom you have made them all. The earth
is full of your creatures. They all look to you to give them their food in due season. When you send their spirit, they are created, and you renew the face of the earth.
Our next hymn is number 130, Beautiful Savior.
Well, good morning again. It's good to be with you this morning. I want to start by bringing greetings from Hidden Acres. It was nice to see the pictures of Hidden Acres and to hear some about the long experience that you as a congregation have with the camp. I've only been there 7 years, and so I know the camp has been going on a lot longer than that, and it's good to know that people have connections there and can go back even further than I can or my wife can. We as a camp are grateful for the connections we have with churches. Churches support us in many ways, and we're very thankful for the ways that churches support us, but also for the ways that churches can use the space. And so we have that's an important connection for us. You've already heard a little bit about me. I'm married to Marianne, and we actually share the role of facilities and environmental stewardship director at Hidden Acres. So I get to take care of the grounds and facilities, and to do so with, you know, an eye towards doing that in a responsible way environmentally. I also get to share in churches and do things like this and talk about the connection between faith and creation and faith in the natural world. As I said, it's been 7 years that I'm at Hidden Acres. I moved there from Pennsylvania. I'm from Pennsylvania. My wife, Marianne, is from Ontario. So when we got married, we lived in Pennsylvania for a while and then moved here. And I brought two things from my experience and my life in Pennsylvania, probably more, but I brought two things to my life here in Ontario. And one is I was a pastor for a time in Pennsylvania. And along with that, I bring a love of scripture and a desire to understand the scriptures and understand how they connect with our lives. So that's the one side of things. The other thing is that I started birding a few years before we moved. And I bring that to Ontario as well. And it has opened my eyes in new ways to the created world and how I'm connected to it. So when I get a chance to speak about faith and the connection, how it connects with the natural world, that's just a lot of fun for me and kind of connects those two things. I enjoy nature in general, but birds are my primary point of connection. But a couple of years ago, I had heard that Jupiter was going to be as close as it's ever been to Earth, at least in my lifetime. And I don't know if anybody remembers that. It was a few years ago. No? Okay. Anyway, I decided, well, this is a, you know, a chance to go outside. I'm going to look and see what Jupiter looks like when it's closer. So I went and I looked up, and it was a bright dot in the sky. And I was like, oh, okay, it looks like a star. But being a birder, I have binoculars. So I got my binoculars, and I looked, and all of a sudden, I could see two moons beside Jupiter, which was pretty cool for me. I don't know that I'd ever really been able to see another planet's moons before. So being a birder, I also have a telescope for birds that are farther away. So I got that out. I was intrigued at this point, and I was able to see four moons around Jupiter. And I was like, wow, that's pretty amazing. And there was something about that experience that made me feel more connected with something that I always knew was out there, Jupiter, or for a long time anyway. But now I felt connected to it because I was able to see it and see the moons and just... It opened my eyes to the way the world is connected a little bit more, anyway. We read Psalm 104, portions of Psalm 104 this morning, and we didn't read the part that are about birds, but Psalm 104 is a birder's psalm. It talks about storks and birds nesting in the branches of the trees and singing in the branches of the trees. And I can just sort of imagine that on a cold, snowy winter day from inside reading Psalm 104. It's great for that, for me. But what Psalm 104 really focuses on is, at least as I've been reading it and reflecting on it, is water as the way that the thing that connects God and connects all of us in the world together. And so the beginning of the psalm pictures God in glory, wrapped in light as creator of everything. And then it gives this picture of the earth. So you have the earth and the mountains that are there, but everything's covered with water. Water is completely covering everything. There's nothing that can grow, nothing that can live there. It's just this barren place covered with water. But then God rebukes the water. And it says it goes down into the valleys and settles into the ravines and into the lakes and into the ponds and into the puddles and into the places where it's supposed to be. And now God sets these borders and these boundaries so that what was once a barren place is now full of life. And so animals can now quench their thirst. And trees can spring up and provide homes for animals. And grass can grow. We read that part. So that the cattle can eat and crops can grow so that people can eat and drink wine and celebrate. In this wet world full of water, life proliferates. And then the psalm says, how many are your works, Lord? In wisdom you made them all. The earth is full of your creatures. And all of these creatures, as the psalm goes on, say, it says, look to God to meet their needs. I want to consider another creation story. This is sort of a poetic account of creation in Psalm 104, but Colossians chapter 1 is also, it's a hymn. It's a poetic account of creation as well, but it doesn't put water in the center. Instead, it depicts Jesus, the Son of God, in the center of all things. And I'm just going to read it, but there's only a couple points I want to take from this. One, Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created. Things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. And here's what gets my attention. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. This description of Jesus helps for me to flesh out this idea that everything is connected. In Psalm 104, it's the water, but here it's Jesus. And that middle verse where it talks about in him all things hold together, I just picture Jesus standing at the center of all things. This is a helpful image for me. I don't know if it helps you. But the strands of this web, like we made this morning, going out and connecting with every part of creation. And the life of God flowing out through those strands into all the world and energizing the entire world. And then also holding it together, keeping everything in line, keeping everything in place. Jesus is at the center, filling everything with meaning and taking care of everything. So there are a couple things that I'd like to draw attention to from these two passages that we've looked at this morning. These passages that depict creation, or at least as I've interpreted them, depicted it as a web that's connected together and connected to God. And the first thing is that we are always in the presence of God. God's life is constantly nourishing us. No matter what we're doing, every breath we take, every glass of water we drink, we're taking in the life of God. And I don't know about you. I mean, yes, we know God is always present, right? That's kind of a staple of Christian theology. But I find it easy to forget that. I'm aware of God's presence when I pray. I'm aware of God's presence maybe at church when I'm worshiping, or if I'm studying the Bible and trying to understand something. But is God present as I'm enjoying a delicious meal? Is God present as I'm shoveling out the walkway? Of course, but am I aware of that? Am I thinking of that? Is it impacting me? So, birding again. I didn't start birding as a spiritual practice. I did it because it was fun, and there's a longer story to that. But God has found me in this practice of birding. When I'm birding, when I'm outside walking a trail or along a lake or wherever I am, I've come to know that God's life is in all these other forms of life around me that I encounter. And I'm not necessarily consciously thinking of this at each moment, although sometimes I am, but still God's life surrounds me and enters into me as I'm hearing the birds, as I'm smelling flowers. And sometimes I'm often out in the mornings, still cool and the sun's just coming up, and I'll just stand like this and let the warmth of the sun just warm me up. And feeling God's presence in the warmth of the sun. Birding is the way that I experience the world as God's gift. And it allows me to remember the reality of Psalm 104, that it's all possible because God has ordered the waters to make space for it all, and then ordered the waters to sustain it all. I know birding is not for everybody, although if you're at all interested, it's great. But I believe that God is ready to meet with us in the real world in various ways. And I don't know what that way is for you. I've thought of what some possibilities might be. Maybe that's in cooking and in recognizing as you're in your kitchen where these different ingredients have come from, how they've come to be, and thinking about all of those things, how God has brought them together to this place and then combining them into a delicious meal. Maybe it's being interested in something like astronomy or mathematics, something, you know, sort of intellectual that you can try to understand and say, what is this world about? How does this world work that God has made? Maybe it's working in your garden, digging with your hands in your garden. Maybe it's simply walking through your town on your streets or in a park and looking around you at the other people who are around you, nature that's around you, whatever is happening around you, and thinking about where is God. Maybe it's working with wood or something like that. But I encourage you to find something you love and to throw yourself into it, being aware that God is present everywhere in this world. So that's the first thing. And the second thing that maybe pertains a little bit more to the topic of crisis as it was introduced this morning is that I want to draw attention to from these passages is the need for hope. I've largely focused on the positive aspects of nature so far, and I want to acknowledge that reflecting on the world we live in and seeing God behind it all is complicated. Okay, so God's in the center of all this, holding it all together. Jesus is there, but that explains maybe why things are good sometimes or why they're beautiful, but what about the pain? What about the heartache? What about death? Both of these passages suggest that we need to reflect on nature with those things in mind. And Psalm 104 says that God's creatures die and return to the dust when God takes away their breath. Now, we might choose to say that in a different way or think about that in different ways, but we know the reality of death. If we spend enough time in nature, we see it. And Colossians, that passage there, also acknowledges that there are powers in the world that bring harm to all of creation. And sometimes we're the victims of those powers, and sometimes we participate with those powers. But we need hope in the midst of the real world that we face and some of the crises and challenges that we face. And there's lots and lots of reasons. I'm gathering you're talking about a number of those in this series on crisis, that we need hope in our world today. And one example is the present threat of climate change. It's a result, I've come to believe it's a result of the way human beings have been living over the last several centuries. And as people, we've contributed to this, but it's also going to affect all of us as well. And I think, you know, I talked about this idea of Jesus standing at the center, holding everything in balance, holding it all together. Why is this happening? Why doesn't Jesus fix it? Why isn't it all of a sudden, you know, why do we have to go through this? Many of us are worried about what is going to happen if things just keep on going. What can we do? What should we do? Well, Colossians draws another conclusion from the fact that Jesus is at the center of everything. And it's through Jesus that the whole of creation is going to be reconciled to God. Yes, there are powers that are beyond your control beyond my control. But Jesus is reconciling everything in creation to God. And I think this suggests that the wrongs of this world will be made right, that death will be overcome in resurrection. And I can't help but think of this as an eternal hope, one that we look forward to beyond death, the hope of the resurrection, thinking of the imagery of in Revelation where there's a new heaven and a new earth. There will be no more death, no more mourning, no more crying, no more pain. And I think that's a part of the answer of what's going on. Jesus is reconciling everything to himself. And in the end, things are going to be right. The problem is, how does that help us now? What do we do now in this world? Do we just wait around for this new creation? Do we just say, well, none of this world matters? I don't think so. And I'm sure, it doesn't make sense to just think that way in this world, because I believe that Jesus is present in this world now, even with all of its problems. And the victory of Jesus that we think about coming in the future also breaks into the present, because Jesus is here. And the problems we face are bigger than us, but God's solutions include us. I don't come to you as an expert on climate change and the science behind it, and even with a lot of ideas that would be new to you as far as what we need to do. We've been told the things we need to do to prevent it: reduce the use of fossil fuels, drive less, fly less, eat less meat, compost. And I'm sure there's other things, and I'm sure there are new things that you could teach me that I can learn. And I'm in the, currently reading a book and part of a book study on this to try to get a better handle on what can I do to help. And I'm sure many of you have been doing these things. And I've been trying to do my part, but sometimes it feels like, it's not a whole lot as an individual that we can do. My point this morning is not to give you a new list of things that you should be doing. There's a place for that, and there's probably other people who can better help you with that. But my message this morning, wherever we're on that journey of action, and maybe we'll have a chance to talk some more during the later on about what you're doing and what we can do. But wherever we're on that journey, we're all connected together. We're all connected to creation. We're all connected to God. And how can we invite Jesus to order our lives, just like God ordered the waters into the ravines and into the places where they're supposed to be, so that life can flourish? How can we allow God to order our lives so that life on earth can flourish? And one way we can start to do that is to see how God orders the world around us. And we can do that by spending time in nature and experiencing God there. I'm getting close to the end here. Often when I share, I share about Hidden Acres either at the beginning or I mix it in, but I want to share a little bit about Hidden Acres here at the end. And our mission is to provide a welcoming, peaceful gathering place where diverse groups of people experience life-giving connections with God, with one another, and with nature. And I think one of the things we do is we get at Hidden Acres, we get people into nature. Nearly 10,000 people came to Hidden Acres in the last year. And that, I just asked our ED what that number was, and it blew me away that many people are coming onto those grounds. And that includes all kinds of different people. We have summer camps, and that's a big part of what we do, allowing children, single moms and their children, adults with special needs. We have a basketball camp where these basketball players get to come And all of these different people spend time in nature. We have school students who are coming each spring and fall, and now actually in the winter as well, we've been running some programs. Many of them are public school students. We're not incorporating a message of faith as we're doing the activities, but what we are doing is giving them a chance to be outside, and I'm convinced God is in the world that they're interacting with, and that God can make a difference even through those ways. We also have retreat groups that come, and some as churches, some as families, community groups, friends, whatever their reason, our goal is that they would come into this space, this natural space that we have, and that it would be a sacred space, a space where the combination of community and nature and God's presence would bring life to them and through them bring life into the world. And you know, I know that not everybody experiences camp the same way and is going to leave camp with the same sense of who God is. I know that's the case, but I believe it is a sacred space just because, so I live there. Maybe I get to take it for granted. It's just where I always am. But I have these encounters with people occasionally that remind me that there's something special about the place. A few years ago, there was a man coming to on-site for the first time. He was spending just a couple nights there, and I met him. I just happened to be out as he was driving in the lane. He came 100 feet into the lane and stopped, and I was talking to him, and he said, "I just feel so much peace." I was like, "You've only been 100 yards." I didn't say that, of course, but I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" I didn't say that either. But there's a sense of there's a difference here. I was talking to a staff person last summer who was wrestling with their faith, with God, what they believed about God, and weren't sure. And we were just talking, and they said, "You know, I don't know what all I believe about God, but when I'm here at camp, God is real. And I believe God is real, and God is here God is at Hidden Acres. God is also here in the streets of Bloomingdale or Waterloo or Kitchener, in the trails of Snyder Flats Conservation Area, on the currents of the Grand River. God is here, and God being here is reason for us to hope in whatever we're facing." Thank you. I look forward to talking more later on. If anybody wants to take a look at these later on, you're welcome to take a closer look, but thank you.
Thank you for sharing. Sorry, what? Oh, I thought you were saying something to me. Our hymn of response is "Touch the Earth Lightly," number 145.